Welcome to the ProWrestling.net free podcast. Today is Monday, March 26, 2018. I am Jason Powell, and I'll be joined shortly by Will Pruitt to discuss the New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Style Evolve show, which Will saw in person, and his visit to the New Japan Dojo in Los Angeles, California. We'll be back right after this brief break for non-members. Okay, Will Pruitt, I want to start with the Strong Style Evolve show, and we'll certainly get to your visit to the New Japan Dojo, but you were in attendance at the Walter Pyramid in Long Beach, California, and you and I were talking beforehand, and just because of the way things are done with the press conferences during the show and all of that, you didn't get to see every match, and so I want to make that clear for everybody up front. If you want kind of a rundown of every match, I did do 40-plus minutes of audio for .NET members on Sunday night after the show, so we're not going to run through everything again here, but I did want to get your just general takes on the show, maybe some of the highlights, lowlights. We'll start with, I think, the obvious highlight of the show, Will. I don't think I'll get much in the way of protest. Your thoughts on the main event, the Golden Lovers facing the Young Bucks?
It was spectacular. I really enjoy the work of Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, and I've made that pretty clear in my writing, but the match was special. The environment for the match was just something else. I was sitting in the press section a little bit, then I got up and ran up to like the gates at ringside to take pictures, and being at ringside for it, you could really feel the energy in the room. They had the crowd in the palm of their hands. Even, you know, the little bits where they messed up. I know Kota Ibushi suffered a concussion after he and Kenny collided going for the Golden Triangle moonsaults, the twin moonsaults, and there were a couple of moments that just seemed a little off, but the crowd was very forgiving and very still very into the match, and people were so enthusiastic about it. Especially what sticks out to me is at the 30-minute mark, the announcement gets made, you know, 30 minutes have passed in this match, and the crowd goes nuts at that announcement. There was a big section of action right before it, and people really, really were enthusiastic about that match, and I don't blame them. I thought it was great. All four men had really great performances.
No disagreement there when it comes to the performance. Now, I did exchange notes last night after the show with .NET staffer Jake Barnett, and he felt like, you know, the match went longer than it needed to. Do you share in that viewpoint?
Not really, but I will say I don't have a good gauge on the length of the match and how it came off on TV, just because I was kind of running around. So lulls in the match, I would get up and go somewhere else, basically. And I was moving around so much that time passed probably a lot quicker for me than someone watching on TV.
Yeah, I think Jake's take on it was essentially that some of the early stuff, a little bit of the stalling and the feeling out stuff, didn't need to happen just because they had the crowd already so invested in this, and they could have just went, you know, hot and heavy from Jump Street. For me, I like that they did that. I like the way the match built. Now, I will say, I don't know that we needed the show to go as long as it did.
Yeah.
You know, I do wonder if that kind of factored into some of it as well. But watching the main event, I didn't think, man, they need to go home. This is taking too long. I just didn't share that same opinion that Jake had. But why did the show need to go 4 hours? It wasn't like, well, there's just so much storytelling they needed to do on this show, and it just kind of felt like, leave them wanting more once in a while. It seems like the only people in wrestling who get that these days is NXT. Everyone just doing these long, bloated shows.
Yeah, I think they could have easily cut out the opening six-man tag and probably cut out the Killer Elite squad against Archer or against Yano and Chuck E. T. Maybe, I mean, honestly, is anyone going to notice if the first three matches are gone?
No.
Like, is anyone going to be mad and you just start this thing off with Cody and Marty against the Gorillas of Destiny? Or maybe you start it off with the big, with the 10-man or 8-man LIJ against Tanahashi's boys match. And you go, you know, you restructure the card a bit, but then you just have those last four or five matches as the big matches that you need to see. Because I'm with you. I think they did a little bit too much on this show. There were too many things. And from a budgetary standpoint, like thinking about paying for flights for all of those guys that right. New Japan has to think about when they come to the U.S., they don't, like, the Killer Elite Squad, Yano, Chucky T, you're not getting more out of them. I guess Juice Robinson and David Finlay against Goto and Gato, you had David Finlay making the challenge later in the show for the U.S. title that was fine. You kind of have that moment, and then Romero and Roppongi 3K against SoCal Uncensored was not useful at all. Not to be mean to any of those guys, I think every wrestler on the show wanted to perform well and wanted to work hard, but you just didn't need that much.
So you're saying you really didn't need to see the Ring of Honor six-man tag team champions lose in the opening match to a team that normally doesn't go after six-man tag titles?
Hey, I mean, they at least made a challenge for them later in the night, but I don't know that it was necessary to see the ROH six-man tag champions lose in the opening match.
Now, have you seen anything today on Frankie Kazarian? I know you said they didn't do a press conference. He ended up suffering what appeared to be some sort of a knee injury during the match, and I just haven't, I'll do a quick double check right now to see if he's updated anything on his own. No, but have you heard, was there any buzz backstage about his situation?
I didn't hear anything backstage about him.
Okay, but you did take part in the press conference with Kenny Omega after the show, and I know it was noted that Kota Ibushi suffered a concussion, and then Omega talked to you about his own injury situation. He'd suffered an eye injury. You can kind of recap what he told you, and, I mean, even though he was making it seem like the only way he wouldn't work the Supercard of Honor show is if, you know, somebody stepped in and medically wouldn't allow him to do so. But do you feel like that's a possibility right now, given the injury that occurred?
I doubt it. He looked pretty messed up in the ring. I know I was talking about it with people at ringside. His eye looked pretty banged up during the match, but the swelling had gone down by the time he came and did the press conference, and he seemed to think he was fine physically, and just, you know, his face was a little bit swollen, but he seemed to believe that he would be fine. He didn't think there was a fracture. He said his vision was fine, and he mentioned that he would have to be medically stopped from working that Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor show against Cody.
Yeah, and so that's obviously great news for Ring of Honor, and well, certainly yeah. Omega.
And hopefully Ibushi can work it too. It's a couple weeks away, and Kenny did seem to think that Ibushi was banged up but should be okay. I would hope that both New Japan and Ring of Honor are being really careful about concussions in general and will make sure that he's passed some sort of impact testing before having that match.
Yeah, absolutely. And there, I mean, just watching the rest of the match, that happened fairly early. It wasn't like, if I didn't know coming out of the show that he was concussed, I don't think I would have been thinking about it. What about you?
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. Although it was clear something happened on that Golden Triangle moonsault spot. That you know, obviously Kenny went up for it and Kota didn't make it. And it was strange sitting in the crowd because I didn't realize they had bumped heads necessarily. I just saw that Kota slipped. And then later on that same turnbuckle, they had a situation actually where Kota was very aware and saved the lives of everyone involved, essentially, by grabbing onto the ropes and reversing the momentum on a big double superplex spot. But in watching that, didn't think, oh, there's something wrong with Kota. It wasn't until Kota Ibushi didn't come to the press conference and Omega mentioned that he was concussed, and that's why, that I realized there was a larger injury at play there.
What did you think of the match that ended up being, you know, the prelude to the main event? The one of the only singles matches on this show. It was for the IWGP U.S. Championship, and it was Hangman Page losing to Jay White. So Switchblade retains his championship.
I don't think Switchblade connects, and I don't think the character works. At the interview we got to do with Jay White at the New Japan Dojo, he was asked sort of, what makes you Switchblade? Like, what was the big change between Jay White and Switchblade? How did that happen? And he said, I play with knives now, and I carved a pumpkin last year, so that was probably it. And he was being a little tongue-in-cheek about it, but I I honestly think like that shows the lack of motivation. Like, they don't know who Switchblade is or why Jay White is Switchblade now. And Jay White comes off as an affable, nice boy, not as like a sadistic serial killer. So I said it after the Tokyo Dome show, and I kind of stand by it. I don't think Jay White is connecting on a super high level, but and seems more like a work in progress. I didn't see this match in front of and with the crowd. I heard the big spots. I was up in the press room during this and kind of getting ready for the main event. And there was the Okada press conference just before it as well that I was taped for New Japan World. But I didn't get to see the entirety of this match. So, and I kind of took the moment to sit and hang out in the press room for a little bit and watch it on the TV instead of being out in the crowd. So I can't give you a good sense of quality, but I know I don't feel like Jay White connects well. And I'm actually really impressed with how Adam Page connects. That guy impressed the hell out of me this weekend. And I think is about, you know, a year to 2 years away from being a major star for whatever wrestling company he's in at the time.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with his progression. And it was sad watching the match, because here's these two guys just going all out and working really hard, and there just wasn't much crowd reaction. And for some reason, White, I mean, I don't even know what I'm supposed to make of his character in terms of heel, babyface, whatever, but he doesn't try to really engage the crowd. And Paige did late, just by, you know, a couple looks to the crowd, and that woke the crowd up a little bit. I think it's just something, you know, having watched Jay White a lot in Ring of Honor as a babyface and now as Switchblade in New Japan, especially, you know, I don't know how much it's going to affect anything in Japan, just kind of a different audience there. But in the U.S., just something as simple as looking to the crowd or a heel mannerism, if that's what he wants to do, I think would have gone a long way in this match in terms of just getting the fans into it. And maybe even, Will, dare I say, letting them know who they want them to be cheering for. It just, I think it suffered from that. Like, do you think they overestimated, well, Paige is with Bullet Club, so he's going to be cheered?
I don't know, because Paige isn't, I mean, Paige is not the Young Bucks.
Right.
Paige is not kind of the part of the Bullet Club I expect to constantly be cheered no matter what they do. So I think they do want Adam Paige to get over as a heel, and that there is that charisma. I almost think this also seemed like a heel versus heel match in a way. People yeah. don't necessarily know how they're supposed to react to Adam Page. They're not quite sure about Switchblade, except he doesn't like Tanahashi. He's a heel. He's in chaos. There's not a lot to Switchblade to grab onto. And I think a crowd reaction, because one of the interesting things for the crowd, they got up for big spots. Those guys were out there killing each other, and it got loud during the big spots of the match, but it you could have heard a pin drop during the less dynamic parts, and contrast that with the main event where the crowd was so hot throughout, and you kind of see where people's attention is. It was a weird, to me, it was a weird match to have there, and a strange place for Adam Page, who is a rising star. I wonder if it's a mistake not to have put the U.S. Championship on Adam Page at this point, who can wrestle more in the United States, does wrestle more in the United States, and will help kind of, I think, be a journeyman with that title more than Jay White would be allowed to.
Well, yeah, that, and you know, you have that Bullet Club dynamic of they're fractured, and so there's some compelling storylines there. Does Omega want to go after the title that he lost? Does Cody want to go after that title? I think there were things they could do, but I mean, obviously they have plans for the Switchblade character. I'm just not quite sure what they are beyond his upcoming match with David Finlay. So yeah, I mean, it just doesn't, I'm hoping a year from now we're like, wow, that Jay White sure is impressive. And once they got through that early Rocky period, he really took off, because he clearly is talented, but it just doesn't feel like I don't know if he knows what his character is yet. It just seems like they decided to pick him and have him dye his hair black and change his name to Switchblade Jay White instead of just Jay White. Am I missing anything?
No, he dyed his hair. He dressed his dog up as Switchblade one time. That was pretty cute. But that's about that's as like close to how that character came to be that I can think of. And to me, it doesn't connect well. This was not because of the wrestlers in it, even. It was a bit of a disappointing semi-main event for the show, and I think a disappointing first United States Championship defense on U.S. soil, and I think that's kind of, Switchblade's a little disappointing, and he makes that title feel like less than, I think, what New Japan wants it to be, and that's the second biggest title in wrestling right now.
What else, since you know you were kind of bouncing back and forth, I'll just kind of throw to you in general, what else from the undercard of this event really stood out to you, positive or negative?
The Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. versus Okada and Ishii tag match went just about how I expected it to, but that was really fun. I think the appreciation that Americans have for Ishii is almost adorable in a way. Like, people really love watching Tomohiro Ishii wrestle. So him getting this big spot and teaming with Okada, who I would say year over year, Okada looks so much more confident right now. I know he's, still on the same championship run he was on last time, but just there is a swagger to him. There's a confidence. There's a fun to what he does. There was one point in the match where Ishii and Suzuki were exchanging those big strong style strikes like they do, and Okada was in the corner almost jumping up and down, banging on the turnbuckle, having a good time. Like, he was cheering for it with the fans, and I was like, this boy loves wrestling. So that was great to see, and I think they did a nice job of building to Zack Sabre Jr. versus Okada, and I'm happy to see them use the slot on Access to build a future match, to say this is coming up, because I think these live shows, especially like, say, the first one last year, the G1 special they didn't use that to build to future matches, and I get it, it was a tournament, it had its kind of standalone format, but them using this to build to a future match, I thought was really, really smart.
And I'm sure you were watching Cody and Skrull against Guerrillas of Destiny. I thought that one stood out as, in terms of, just wasn't the match of the night, but just the personalities that Cody and Skrull showed, I thought were a blast.
Yeah, I was telling you before we started, I think Cody is doing some of the best heel work in pro wrestling right now. He's entertaining, he's fun. There's a bit of a manicness to what he's doing, like a guy watching everything fall apart and realizing he caused it, but also desperately trying to stay ahead of it, that I think is really great. It is great work, and it's something I didn't know if Cody had in him leaving WWE, and he's surprising me and really delighting me by being able to tell the stories as effectively as he has. And he's also working with guys like the Bucks, with Omega, and those guys really help to tell stories, because I think they believe strongly in wrestling and the stories that wrestling can tell, thus are willing to do a lot. But Cody is, as kind of the villain in this, as the not even anti-hero, as just the antagonist, is doing awesome work. So that match definitely stood out from a storytelling perspective. Osprey and Liger was really fun. That was a great great little sprint from those two, and the challenge with Mysterio was very over with the crowd. The surprise Rey Mysterio appearance made people really happy, and knowing that he would have a match with Will Ospreay at some point seemed to delight folks. That stood out, and then just, you know, the popularity of a lot of the New Japan regulars, the main eventers Japan. Oh, people love Yano.
Yeah.
Yano is so over in the United States, it's stupid. People adore Toru Yano, and I absolutely understand why. And Yano and Chuck E. T. is way too natural of a team for me. Like those two should be a tag team everywhere they go, because they both have very similar styles and attitudes.
Would it kill someone to tell the story of Chuck E. T.? I complain about this all the time with Ring of Honor, and I really don't expect it in New Japan, just, you know, different language and all of that. But, like, I watch this guy in Ring of Honor weekly. I know he's a good talker based on reputation. I think he's touched the mic one time now in the time that he's been there. They just assume everyone knows who best friends are and why they're best friends. It's bizarre. Anyway, I'll say
the weird thing about that, too, is Chuck E. T.'s a comedy wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, he can do a lot more. I'm not trying to box him in, but Chuck E. T. is kind of most famous for comedy. Why not do some backstage stuff where he's funny? Why not let fans let the fans who are just catching up to who he is see how affable and enjoyable he is and the best friends are. I'm not going to suggest they film a Fashion Files and make it all those guys do, but I think Ring of Honor and New Japan could stand to do a little bit more. At least in New Japan, they have that press conference thing where you can go and watch those after matches and kind of see a little more from the wrestlers. Those are really interesting little character opportunities. I was talking to a wrestler last night who said when they first got to New Japan, they were surprised. They were like, they didn't realize that they were supposed to cut a promo at those. They thought they were going to get asked questions, and then they figured out, no, this is, you walk backstage, you cut a promo, and then maybe you take questions. You might take some questions afterwards, but it wasn't quite natural to them at first, and getting used to it, they found it to be really effective and a great touch to the New Japan programming.
Definitely. And you touched on Rey Mysterio. You mentioned the match with Ospreay. They set up three matches for Rey. I mean, he already had the one with Jushin Liger that was supposed to happen on this show, but Rey's injury prevented that from happening. So he does the end, you know, he mentions that match is going to happen. And then he also, you know, had the thing with Ospreay challenging him. And then he had Marty Scurll remove his mask, and Rey quickly covered up because, you know, you don't want anyone to see Rey Mysterio's face. They've never seen it before. Oh yeah, wait, they did, but anyway, we get what they were
available
going for
on a WWE network near you.
Right, but you know, you still get what they're going for. But three different opponents that they set up for this guy at the same time, he's supposedly talking with WWE. I don't know, I came away from this show going, wow, either New Japan set up three matches that are never going to happen, or Rey's not going back to WWE anytime soon.
Yeah, and I found myself sort of thinking the latter, or at least it's possible between this and the Rumble appearance, Rey was able to drive his price to a point that it's more worth it to him to work on a per match deal with New Japan for a little and get some of those big matches. And if Rey is smart, he knows those will do nothing unless he gets hurt, seriously hurt doing them. They'll do nothing but garner a little more buzz for him. And then maybe he comes back to WWE around the Rumble next year.
Something else you touched on earlier, why the abundance of tag team matches? I mean, I know it's kind of what they do on their tours, and maybe I just got a little spoiled watching the G1 special last year because it was a tournament. We ended up with more singles matches, but, you know, we waited until, I think, the Thursday before this show to finally get the lineup, and I think everything they announced other than replacing Mysterio was a tag match or a six-man or an eight-man. I'm with you and going, boy, this is expensive. Do you really need all of this talent? And for that matter, I enjoy a good tag match, and I enjoy some of the stuff they do on New Japan World for their, what in some cases are essentially house shows, where I feel like I'm getting an actual story told. It might not be a major development, but what's something I've mentioned to you and others is that, like, for instance, when Naito and Suzuki are in the ring together, that's compelling to me, and there's, you know, they're setting up something for down the road. Watching this show, I didn't feel like much was being set up in some cases. Now, yeah, they put Sabre over in his tag match, and that was cool, but they didn't go as far as they could have. They didn't have Okada, lose by ref stoppage or tap out, whatever. But so that was kind of a rare example of, well, they at least made the effort. I guess one of the issues I had was so much of this undercard. Not that it was a bad show by any means. I enjoyed it, but I just felt like this was, in many cases, a bunch of house show matches that happened to be broadcast on Access. From a creative standpoint, I just didn't feel like they really went in a storytelling direction in a way that's going to hook you going, man, I got to, you know, watch that next show to see where this goes.
Yeah, and I thought that when I saw the card, I went, wow, this is kind of a standard minor New Japan show. This isn't a... This is not a major show. They are not attempting to really push that the U.S. expansion is still huge. It's important, and, you know, they're given a few, but they're Okada's in a singles match. You know, they're not interrupting their current booking plans to make sure that the U.S. show is great. They're going, okay, well, we're going to book the U.S. show like it's the first day of three New Beginning shows or something like that. They're really not they're not doing much. And I just think do shorter shows at that point, especially, like I said, when you're talking about the cost of flights and everything, you don't need to fly all of the wrestlers in that they flew in. And I think fans will respond better to a shorter show, as much as, yeah, it means you may not get to see every wrestler on the New Japan roster. If you don't get to see Yano this year, I mean, that's a bummer, but maybe they book a special spot to make sure they bring Yano in for San Francisco, and then people do get to see him and are happier. I think they'd be better off doing that.
Or, I mean, just that eight-man tag. There were some talented people in there that I really don't remember them doing a whole lot. I remember, you know, Naito's personality stands out. Tanahashi is Tanahashi, but it was Takahashi and Lee doing their thing that stood out. And so a talented guy like Sonata, a talented guy like Kushida, I'm sure they did things that Kushida, I'm just not remembering.
Yeah, Kushida really didn't get to do a ton. Sonata did his tie him up in a knot spot that he likes to do and leave him and then kick him. But yeah, I don't feel like
I'm sorry, I still hate that spot. It's just like it looks ridiculous.
Kushida didn't get to do a lot though, and that was strange. I mean, I feel like Taguchi got to do more in the match than Kushida.
Yeah,
which is funny. And I mean, Taguchi is entertaining on his own, but yeah, it was not the spot and not the moment that I would have gone with there. And I don't know that I would have put all eight of those guys together in that way. But I also get New Japan singles matches are tough on the wrestlers' bodies, and I understand not wanting to do a lot of them. I mean, the average, we've talked about it on the site before, the average wrestler in New Japan works under 20 singles matches per year.
Wow.
So you're not going to get throwaway singles matches like you do in WWE. They try and make them all matter. And one of the byproducts of that is there are a lot of multi-man tags. There are a lot of tag matches that have to hold attention and get stories across. And they did a decent job of some of those with some of those on this show, but they aren't, they weren't paying attention to doing everything they could in that respect.
So the first time, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, the Long Beach Convention Center?
Yeah.
This time they moved to a bigger venue in the Walter Pyramid. Clearly, as one of the Young Bucks put it, they needed a bigger venue because this thing sold out in under 10 minutes, and they're getting one. They're going to San Francisco at the Cow Palace on July 7th. No official announcement of this being a next Access show. Was there any buzz about that backstage as far as is this going to be a New Japan World show or an Access event?
No telling. The Access PR people, I think, were sort of expecting it to be an Access event, but yeah, there was no official announcement, no official word, but it seemed like they would likely be around for that. And that actually makes sense because it seemed like, as far as public relations go, Access PR was handling all of the public relations for this. I mean, New Japan had a couple people in, but they did not have English-speaking PR people around. Like, they were leaving a lot of that up to Access.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, probably will be. It's a G1 special, as the first one was, and it's called Fighting Spirit Unleashed. And, I mean, the venue, the listed capacity, I don't know for what, if it's wrestling, all, you know, sports, I don't know, but is just shy of 13,000. They gonna have any trouble selling this out?
I don't think so. Them staying on the West Coast, I find really interesting, and going to San Francisco, I think is smart. You get another market, you get closer to, you know, another major city.
Well, and real quick, for those of us who don't know California geography, like, how far apart San Francisco to where they were last night?
About an eight-hour drive. It's under an hour
supply. Pretty significant.
Yeah, no, it is pretty significant. I assume they'll still just take the ring from the dojo and bring it up. But
sure.
Like, it is a significant drive, but it's not a killer. I've done it multiple times overnight. Like, you leave at 9 p.m. and get in around 3 or 4 in the morning and then go to sleep, depending on how you drove. So it's not a killer drive. It's an easy, easy flight. I mean, I might try and go to the show and fly in and out on the same day, or do like one night in a hotel or something. Like, it's that easy to do.
Yeah.
Depending on family and if anyone else is coming with me and stuff like that. But it's really easy to get from place to place there. I'm curious to see them in the Cow Palace, to see a big wrestling show in the Cow Palace. And I don't think they'll have an issue selling it out. I do want to point out, ticket prices on the secondary market were really high for this show a couple weeks ago, and they came back down to earth during the week. So demand was not insane. It's not like it was spiking. Ticket prices were about $150 to $200 2 to 3 weeks ago, and yesterday you could get a ticket for as cheap as like $65. Between $65 and $80 seemed like the sweet spot for getting into the arena. So,
what was the actual ticket price for those tickets that went for $60, $65?
I think probably around $50. I know they were selling $50 seats at the box office and stuff. So still above, it's, you know, a decent amount above your normal
the Scalpers.
Yeah, you're getting a little bit of a markup, but nothing like what Long Beach tickets were last year, which they were going for a lot more. And it seems like they ran the bigger building and kind of wondered if they would sell it out, even though Long Beach last year, the building was about half the size and they sold it out really fast at the same time. So you'd think they would have gone a little bit bigger, but I don't know if they had run, say, Staples Center or the Forum. I do not know if they would have sold this show out. I know there was kind of that talk, like they really should have booked Staples, but one, there are some exclusive WWE contracts on arenas that exist. Right. And two, I don't know that they would sell out Staples Center. I think it'd be close. You'd get a really nice looking crowd there. You'd be able to fill at least the lower bowl, but I do not know that they would get the, you know, 15,000 people in they need, or, you know, 15 to 20,000 that they need to really sell that place out. I think the Cow Palace is a nice middle ground for them to test out bigger crowds and also test out coming to the market more and more often. It's not like people are going to be starved for New Japan action at that point.
Well, I mean, clearly it's nice to know there's some distance between the two. It really is two separate markets. I think people see California.
Yeah. Unless
they know the area. They just assume, oh, similar market, bigger venue. But no, 8 hours apart, you said. And then, hell, they can still go to Chicago. I think there's obviously going to be a ton of interest on the East Coast whenever they decide to go there. And, I mean, as this thing grows, it's going to be more than just major markets, I would assume. And with the Cow Palace, Will, I got to think, like, if there's any trouble moving tickets, just send the Golden Lovers to the Castro District and that problem's solved.
I do think there could be a significant significant portion of people there for the representation, which could be very fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, compare this to what did you enjoy more? I mean, the last time it was a two-night affair. Did you enjoy G1 Special more than this show? How are they comparable in your mind?
I liked the G1 Special shows more because I am more of a singles match guy. I think you can do a lot in a singles match that you can't in the big multi-man tag. So those shows felt more loaded and action heavy, where this one felt bloated. Like I said, you could have cut 3 or 4 matches from this and had a nice svelte 2.5 to 3 hours, and people would have been really happy at the end anyways. Like, people would have really loved it where they went over 5 or 4 hours that the show
was. I think it was 4+, because I remember Ross telling people, hey, I told you to set your DVRs to go long. So it was over 4. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're talking about over 4 hours of action that just didn't need to be that long. The fans in the arena were good sports about it, but definitely exhausted by the end. And I think it would have been a nice choice to leave some stuff off, or maybe add one more singles match to this show. I said to Jake Barnett over the weekend, or Friday when we recorded our show, it would have been a really good idea to do Naito against Chris Jericho on this show. I know that they had already sold out the building, and there was a rumor it'd be there, but again, they've already sold out the building. Maybe that's the G1 Special match. But they could have done a little more for the fans with Naito versus Jericho instead of a lot of those tag matches. But, you know, those are nitpicks. Both were really good shows. They were really fun. But I definitely preferred last year's G1 Special to this year's Strong Style Evolved.
I was really hoping, you know, I didn't even look at the Fozzy Tour schedule because I was kind of like, but I was just hoping that it was like, all right, Jericho's going to show up, or we're going to get a Jericho video.
I think he would. Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't know what his status is going forward. Has there been any buzz about that? Like, is he done, or is it just, it'll happen eventually?
The only buzz I heard was right after he did the Naito attack at New Year's Dash, basically saying Jericho's not done in New Japan.
Right.
And that's it. That was all of it. So I assume he'll be around at some point. Maybe they realized they could leave that match off of this show because they were doing the Cow Palace and needed a quality match to fill the 12,000 seat venue. And I would commend them for that in a way, actually, in making sure that they held off because they knew they needed to fill that place.
And you know, you mentioned the length of the show, and it was for us in the wrestling media like a warm up for WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah,
we'll bring up NXT again. The Takeover specials tend to go 2.5 hours or so.
Bless them.
I don't hear anyone going, you know, it was a good show, but it would have been so much better if it was another hour. Now you're left wanting more. I don't think people would complain if it was a 3.5 hour show, for instance, but. I don't know, when did we move into this more is better territory in the world of pro wrestling? I mean, I know it. Look, Ring of Honor back in the day was kind of guilty of going overboard with the length of their matches, and now that, you know, that was under the Gabe Sapolsky regime. And
when did the Gabe become the standard in wrestling?
Well, he has changed.
Gabe shows were, yeah.
He doesn't take that approach anymore, you know, but WWE goes overboard with the length of WrestleMania, and how I think we're looking at 4 hour dual brand pay-per-views coming out of WrestleMania, and plus their damn kickoff shows. It's too much. I wish all these companies would go, we don't need to do this. You know, 3 hours is good. 3.5 hours once in a while. Okay, that's fine. But I don't know. I mean, you said the crowd was exhausted. Was there anyone grumbling about the show going too long for their taste?
God, no. No, people, I mean, just watch the crowd reactions for that main event. No one was upset
by
the end of the show. Like, everyone, that was the match people came to see. Everyone was happy once that match was occurring. I mean, and as far as the wrestlers go, I mean, the Young Bucks are Southern California wrestlers. People really, really connect with and love them in Southern California. And you add in Kenny Omega, and it's still fairly rare to see Kenny Omega wrestling in the United States. And same goes for Kota Ibushi. Like, you have something really unique there. And this dream tag team match between these two teams that people speculated about and hoped would happen, but didn't get a chance to see until last night.
Well, tell me about your trip to the New Japan Dojo. They're opening a dojo in the Los Angeles area. Is it technically Los Angeles, or is it just called New Japan Los Angeles kind of a thing?
It's Carson, California. It's about...
Where one of the stadiums is going to be, I think?
Yeah. It's... isn't there just the... No, it's in the same city, actually, right down the street from where the Chargers play now.
That's what it is. Okay, there was some NFL connection there.
Yeah, Carson is the Chargers. It's where the StubHub Center that they play in is. That's so strange.
That Los horrible, Angeles horrible stadium that doesn't seat enough people, yet they still can't sell it out?
Yeah, the soccer stadium that they're playing in. Strange. Right down the street from there, it's a warehouse building. You drive up, and it is a nondescript warehouse. And this, they were doing... It was a fan fest / press event to see the new dojo. So it was there was a ring set up and basically nothing else in there. They had some chairs set up for press to sit in. Talking to some of the Access PR people, they got into that, New Japan got into that building about on Monday, and the press event was, I think they had a training camp Friday and a press event on Saturday. So they were... they were very quick in getting the ring in, getting weights in, and there was a ring, there were some weights, and it looked like there were some offices off to the side, things like that. But the event itself was kind of the christening of the dojo. They did a little press conference for Adam Page and Jay White, and they had some media question, some media Q&A opportunities afterwards. In a bit of a backstage area with just media members and Tanahashi, Shibata, Jay White, and Adam Page. And Jushin Thunder Liger, who didn't really say much, so I didn't post a video of him, but he was a part of that as well. So it was a really, it was fun, it was interesting, but it was a media event, and then they had a couple matches at the end of it as well.
Now, you haven't been to the Performance Center yet, right?
I have not been to the Performance Center yet. I keep avoiding Orlando because I'd have to hang out with Brian Fritz.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah, I know, exactly.
Right?
Who went to Strong Style Evolved with you last year? The G1 Special with you last year. But just based on what you know from photos, videos, whatever, I mean, is this at all comparable, or is this a pretty small-scale thing that New Japan is doing?
It looked a lot smaller than what the Performance Center is. There was one ring, not the 7 WWE likes to brag about. It looks like kind of an offshoot in a training school, and it was also referred to by like Shibata and Tanahashi as a bit of a, and Adam Page actually, as a bit of a home for US-based New Japan talent. For guys to be able to wrestle, work out in a New Japan ring and do stuff like that while still in the United States, I think will be a real benefit to the place. I wouldn't be shocked to see it as more of an excursion school or a finishing school. Shibata is going to be the head coach there, and he has Scorpio Sky as the assistant head coach, who I assume will be doing most of the physical and in-ring stuff, because Shibata, I would think they don't want getting physical at the moment. So it doesn't seem Performance Center comparable, but it seems like a nice facility. And Shibata made sure we all knew it was a dojo, not a performance center. And when asked what would set this apart from other wrestling training facilities in the U.S., Shibata said, well, they've got Shibata.
Well, I would like to think that, you know, at least once during somebody, however long they're at the school, at least one time it's going to be required that Minoru Suzuki come over and beat the holy hell out of them.
Yeah, I would think that's going to be every time New Japan or Suzuki comes to the U.S., he's going to stop off in L.A. and put the fear of God into some people, because that's what Suzuki seems to do. He was warming up in the ring when I walked into Strong Style Evolved last night, and I was definitely a little bit afraid for the people he was in the ring with, and really, really thankful I was not one of them. I walked by him shortly after, and I've never been so afraid in my life. He's just a scary man.
Like, he really even, is.
Like, he was completely nondescript when I walked by him. Like, you know, just kind of, but I, like, just seeing him, I'm like, stay out of the way. Stay out of the way. Don't look at him too much. Oh, God, don't make eye contact. He'll kill you.
You sound just like Kevin Kelly and Don Callis on commentaries. There's definitely something to this to not make eye contact with Minoru Suzuki thing that's going on. I get it. They put that over so well, and I'm never quite sure, are they just putting him over, or are they being brutally honest about the way they feel about this guy?
What if Minoru's just kind of a lonely guy? Like, what if this is all making him real sad?
Makes it sound like it. Like, I mean, I don't understand I don't know the lyrics because it's in Japanese, but it just kind of sounds like this lonely man song.
Yeah, Minoru Suzuki's just kind of he's like, oh, I really wanted to talk to him, and he just walked by and wouldn't look at me.
I'm so misunderstood.
Yeah, I'm so misunderstood. I'm going to go beat up a young boy.
Anything else that we haven't touched on that you wanted to hit on? And certainly plug where people can find your videos, obviously at .net, but I know you have a YouTube page and your Twitter page, and just like I say, anything else you wanted to hit on before we wrap this up?
Yeah. Once again, New Japan came in and did a really nice event on the West Coast. I'm curious to see if they keep rolling through events, if they keep rolling through more U.S. cities, if they're kind of going to try and keep it West Coast centric, which I will say the West Coast, as far as like big wrestling events, is starved. Ring of Honor doesn't come out here. You've got PWG, which I think a lot of people think about, but they run 8 to 10 events a year, and you know, three of those events are all one weekend. PWG is not exactly prolific as say Ring of Honor is on the East Coast, where you can see Ring of Honor pretty often in the East Coast and through the South. And so I'm curious to see if they keep serving the West Coast community that way, or move further east as time goes on. But Ring of Honor, or New Japan Pro Wrestling, did some really great business this weekend. As far as the fan experience goes, it seemed like outside of the arena, they had a merch booth set up that was for both people with tickets and people who weren't able to get them.
Ooh,
there was
smart.
An insanely long line at that merch booth before the building opened. As far as Cal State Long Beach goes, a fine place to have a show at the Pyramid, but ask them to open the bathrooms outside of the arena prior to shows, because it was a Sunday, the campus was shut down, and there were no bathrooms outside for the people lined up either for merch or to get into the show early.
Ooh, that's not so good.
Yeah, that I saw at one point a very long line for a single porta potty that existed on the outside there, that I think was for something else, but obviously was close enough to the arena for people to find it, and I just felt bad for those poor souls. So that was, you know, a small issue, but an issue nonetheless. Concessions lines at this place, it was a smaller arena. You know, it's a 5,000 seat arena. There was a massive concessions line for the entire night. It never really died down. Both the concessions and the merch lines for the two New Japan merch booths inside of the arena were insane all night long. People were obviously spending a lot of money on merchandise and really excited about it. And I'll say I was surprised on the merch front. They did not bring a lot of wrestler-specific merch. I mean, they had Okada Buck beach towels. And I mean, I was tempted, but who wouldn't want to lay on the sand with Kazuchika Okada? but I was surprised not to see a Golden Lovers t-shirt, a Young Bucks t-shirt, some Cody merch. Like,
was
especially
it weird not seeing John Cena merch? Or did they somehow have that, like they do at every WWE show, whether he's there or not?
That would have been great. There's just a John Cena / Hello Kitty merch. Yeah, sure, why not? Because they did have, I regret at the moment not purchasing the New Japan Pro Wrestling Hello Kitty crossover t-shirt they were selling. I feel like that would have been a really nice choice merch-wise, but I resisted the urge to grab that one. But they didn't. They had like New Japan logo and Lakers colors that seemed pretty unique. But I was surprised that they didn't have more merch, just given what, you know, given what the show was, more wrestler specific stuff. They had a Los Ingobernables t-shirt, but again, just really basic stuff. And I think that's somewhere that New Japan still could really make a lot more money if they were selling more wrestler specific merch at those merch tables, because man, the merch table was doing business all night long. They had an intense amount of action there.
One thing I wanted to ask before you plug the videos is, what's the crowd like compared to, you know, you've been to many WWE house shows over the years, and that's a family-friendly thing, so talk about that. And how many women are in attendance at a New Japan Pro Wrestling show over the last couple of years?
So you're getting your really hardcore U.S. wrestling crowd, which... Yeah. Skews male. I think it's a bit of an insular community of dudes. But I will say, I see more women, and especially hardcore wrestling fan women, at these New Japan shows. There were a couple of cosplaying as the Golden Lovers that I was just like, they did a really nice job on their costumes, and I wish I would have grabbed a photo with them. But I'm sure if you looked hard enough, you could find them online, and they looked awesome. There were a decent amount of women as I moved through the crowd. Emily from UpRocks was one of the press people covering the event and asking questions. I think Cody in the video I posted referred to her as blue because she has blue hair.
Right.
But she was one of the press members asking questions and stuff after. So New Japan, I think, does a decent job of not shaming women for getting involved or saying like, you don't know enough, you can't enjoy this. And I think actually New Japan does a good job of saying, yeah, wrestlers are attractive. Here's a semi-nude photo shoot of Kazuchika Okada. Kudos to them on that one, by the way. they do a nice job of serving that demographic more than like WWE for whatever reason, but a decent amount of women in attendance, but still probably like 90-10.
Sure.
Percentage wise,
you know, that's actually better than I thought you were going to say. I would have guessed like 98.
Yeah, like and maybe I'm
98.2, by the way, not 98, because I would have left out 2% for something else. But sorry, go ahead.
Maybe I'm overestimating the amount of women in the crowd, but I saw a decent amount of them engaged, and it still was a heavily male audience. It skewed really male, and that you know, that's just kind of what they do. But the crowd, it is a U.S. hardcore wrestling crowd. I think you can hear an interesting thing when, you know, Ring of Honor does like the Japanese ROH shows that were on New Japan World and broadcast by the New Japan team and all of that. But when they do the
Rising shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The crowd, the Japanese crowd that's normally really quiet, acts like a Ring of Honor crowd. They chant a lot more. They do a lot more the crowd involvement stuff where, you know, the Japanese crowds are famously, you know, kind of quiet, and they get up for the big stuff and all of that, but they're not loud the entire time. Yeah, you don't get the same with a U.S. crowd at a New Japan show. No one is there. Everyone is there to be, you know, the loud U.S. fan, not to be the respectful Japanese fan. And
unless Jay White's wrestling.
Yes, when Jay White is wrestling, everyone is respectful. We'll go with that.
Yes, yes.
Really, just so much respect for the Switchblade. So you get a lot of loud crowd chants. You got, oh, God, this really dumb person behind the press booth. The second they took out a table in the main event, started going like, "We want tables!" loud and obnoxiously, and no one was really joining in, someone finally turned around and was like, "They just took out a table. Like, what? Yeah, cool. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you the way you are?" But he was a loud and obnoxious fan all night. So you do get your decent amount of obnoxious drunk dudes.
And that was Dave Meltzer, everyone.
No, Dave was very respectful and typing up his report on the show on his laptop throughout the evening. Did not have the notepad with him. He did have laptops. Yeah, right? How does he even star rate without a notepad?
They not sell notebooks in the area? I mean, you said, like, this, you know, campus was kind of closed down.
I'm sure Dave Meltzer could have stopped at a Staples sometime between Saturday and Sunday. I don't think he wanted a notepad. But yeah, so the crowd really was enthusiastic and happy to be there, though.
Yeah.
There is something to New Japan in the U.S. that is a different environment than you're going to get at other shows, even if it's not exactly the environment one would expect from a Japanese show.
Well, start plugging away on those videos, Will. Where can people find them?
You posted them on the site. There's an article up. I think I have a couple more press conference videos. Last night's a bit of a blur, so I need to check and see what I actually have on my camera. But I have a couple more press conference videos I'll probably be editing and posting later today. But there's the Cody Rhodes discussing the Bullet Club, saying, interestingly, he never should have joined the Bullet Club, that I put up on YouTube from that press conference. And that's available on the site. You can find it on my Twitter, at Will Pruitt. Or just look for the Strong Style Evolved coverage that Jason did and the press conferences that went up. Also, there's a Kenny Omega video speaking after the match about his Kota Ibushi's injury, about how he feels about Bullet Club, how it felt being in that match, and giving some really interesting thoughts on tag team wrestling and wrestling storytelling that I think gives you a glimpse into kind of Kenny's mind, and that's up as well. So there are those interviews with Tanahashi, Shibata.
About his hair. Shibata, but Tanahashi.
Yeah, Tanahashi, we talked extensively about his hair at the press Q&A. That was really great. And he does have a translator and swore that next year he would speak English to the press. So that's really exciting.
Was he John Cena?
Yeah, Tanahashi is John Cena. He is learning English and doing a decent job. Like, Tana speaks pretty... It's broken, but... speaks and understands English pretty decently from talking to him.
I think Cena's got him on the Mandarin, though. I think Cena seems pretty fluent.
Yeah. So it's Tanahashi, Shibata, Adam Page, and Jay White talk to us at the dojo opening. So there are... So those videos are all up as well at It's Will Time on YouTube, if you want to find them there, or you can just... go to Twitter, go to the website, and find links there. I'm at Will Pruitt on Twitter, and in the next few days, I'll also be posting photos I took from the show. I joked on Twitter last night because a buddy of mine in the area who does the Shake Them Ropes podcast said, like, Will Pruitt out there running around like a madman getting photos, and I was like, yeah, maybe like two are going to be good. So I'll be posting those on the site and pressuring Jason into using them as the cover photos for New Japan coverage in the future. So
perfect. Yeah. Yeah, and it's Will with one L on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah, because someone has at Will Pruitt with two L's. Although, I will add, when spelling Will, that second L is unnecessary.
It really is. Yeah, I wonder why that, well, maybe it would have come off as Wild Pruitt. Is that why Will is always with two L's?
Well, I think because William is spelt with two L's, because it would be,
well, is it necessary there?
Because there's a, it would be W-I-L-I-A-M, and that doesn't work.
Yeah, I guess William.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, hey, I've got an unnecessary L in my name, too, at the end of it, Powell. I think we could get by with one.
I think, as a whole, ProWrestling.net uses too many L's.
We really do. Absolutely. That was a thing at the Torch, too. Mitchell, McNeil, Powell, Keller's got too well. Yeah, it was just like, what the hell? So I think it's an English language thing. We need to get rid of the L's in future generations.
I think we should discuss this. This is something I could bring up with Tanahashi sometime.
Yeah, really? Well, just on that note, everybody, thank you. Hey, I'm sorry, you had more to say?
No, just confuse the hell out of Tanahashi talking about how many L's are in things. He's like, listen, I just figured this language out. You need to stop.
Just when he thinks he has it figured out, you throw him off completely and just make him not want to learn any English ever again. But that's going to do it for us today, everybody. We meant to talk briefly, and here we are approaching an hour, but there was a lot of fun stuff in there. Definitely enjoyed it. Check out those videos either on Will's social media platforms or at ProWrestling.net. And be aware, ProWrestling.net is launching a new podcast, my podcast. Jason Powell hosts the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast, most likely coming your way later this week. There's a chance. I'm just waiting to finalize an interview that was supposed to be set up for this week. I'm hoping it goes smoothly. If not, it will certainly be available next week. It'll be a weekly podcast. I'm really looking forward to it again. The Pro Wrestling Boom podcast is coming soon. Until next time, everybody, take care.